Railroad can, by the way, and we've never complained about that. The railroads historically maintain much lower rates than we do on drilling mud, but darn it, their economics justify it.
So essentially what you're saying is be fair.
Right. That's what my testimony asked for. No unfair competition, whatever that is.
Thank you, Mr. Shapiro. I have a feeling that to reach one of the questions that the little parrot, Gillette parrot, ought to appear at the bottom of the screen with round one, round two, round three, like they used to with the...
I hope I haven't been that way.
No, I hope I haven't been either, and I do thank you for answering my question.
Thank you.
Davis?
No, thank you.
Senator Helton? Senator Sackler?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chef.
Just a minute. I remember something from last time, and I'm sorry to interfere this, but I'm still a little confused on the subsidy issue. If I remember correctly, you stated last time we discussed this, that like extending the railroad to other areas, increasing the length of it or something like that, you did not consider as a part of your objection. Is that
right? Is correct, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shapiro. I think your testimony and your comments were creators of real lively material. Representative Bettisworth, you didn't have any comments you'd like to make at the time, did you? All right.
I'll jump up if I do.
Okay. Our next group or persons that will be testifying before us will be Alaska Trucking Association. T.J. Thrasher, I believe it is. Glasses off so I can see how that she comes.
I hope each of you have what we have called our initial position statement. We call this initial because we would like to have further comment on this as the legislation moves through each house. We are periodically reviewing how we feel about different issues, so we have said this is our initial position statement. My name is T.J. Thrasher. I am Managing Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. We have approximately 225 members. Those members are, for the most part, trucking firms. We do have members who are water carriers. We do have some members who are air carriers. And, of course, we have our related and allied service people. For the most part, we represent those who are in the for-hire carriage business. Rather than read this in full, I think you will note that we have very carefully, we have learned our lesson, and we have not used the word subsidy. We realize that as a trucking industry and as a one single industry, that we did not build the highways over which we derive our revenue. We do, however, pay a fair share of the taxes that are collected. We recognize that even this fair share or the total amount collected does not in any way construct a highway in full as far as total appropriations, nor does it cover in full the cost of maintaining, upgrading, repairing that highway. We can get you information as to what a five-axle vehicle would pay on an average basis in the state of Alaska, and if you could somehow figure out what it does cost to maintain the highways or what it does cost to build the highways, maybe you could take that and prorate it to that single cost. We do know that there are approximately 10,000 commercial vehicles in the state of Alaska. Some of those are private carriers, but they're nonetheless commercial. There are approximately that number of trailers that are pulled by those units. So we do not have that information today, but we can get that. And we'd be able to help you in any way trying to figure out what a fair share of a tax is. I think, rather than belabor and carry on, we probably have two very important concerns. And, of course, the major concern is that a state-owned railroad will not enter into the other modes of transportation. And, of course, we are single issue, we are special interest, and maybe we're asking for protection. We are asking that, as a private industry, we be allowed to stay in Alaska and to contribute to the entire transportation network. We would like language in any legislation, particularly in the operations language, that would so state that. We want the railroad to be a railroad. We want the railroad to confine its service and its operations to the railway. And in short, we want them to stay out of the trucking, out of the air carrier, and out of the water carrier and the motor carrier industry. That is our major concern. And we are asking again that perhaps we have the opportunity now of including that. We do not want to tie the railroad's hands so that they cannot be competitive. We want them to be competitive. But that, then, is our major concern. Our second major concern is then, of course, accountability. As this language in each of the House, the House bill and the Senate bill, there really is no room for public input, public scrutiny. Now, by saying that, we're not saying that every time the railroad corporation or manager or whoever talks with anyone regarding a rate that it has to be through public hearing. That isn't what we're saying. But we are saying that somewhere along the way there has to be accountability for how they determined that rate and how they signed that contract. It is public funds they're using, and we think that that accountability needs to be there. Basically, those are our two concerns. We want the rate to be reasonable, and we are not going to get into subsidy and how you should determine that it is a reasonable rate, but we do want it to be based on a real cost. We are customers of the railroad. In addition to that, we compete with the railroad on some parallel routes, and we want to remain both a customer and a competitor. We want reasonable rates, and whatever language or whatever legislation we can enact that would assure that it is a real cost rather than a competitive. I guess what I'm really saying is that we don't want to be priced out of business with public funds. And however we can do that and still not hamper the railroad's ability to compete and to make a revenue. And those are our concerns in a nutshell.
To reiterate then, you want the railroad to be a viable economic entity?
Yes, we do.
You want it to be able to make money?
Yes.
Okay. So you feel that if it makes money and it's charged with the idea of making money, then its rates will have to be fair because it's not going to be able to make low rates if it's breaking even or is allowed to operate not making money.
Absolutely. And we think that the rate should be to make a revenue rather than to conquer the market. Quite frankly.
The same question I asked the previous gentleman. Were you here when Mr. Barnes from Commonwealth North made his presentation on how to purchase the railroad?
I got some of it. I did not get a copy of the report until I came in late just this morning. No, I did not hear it entirely.
I'll give you a copy of that
report.
Thank you. He suggested that the state pay the $23 million to the federal government and then write the Railroad Corporation a check for $37 million for startup costs, OSHA requirements, working capital, that kind of thing, that would be the startup costs in any business because of what kinds of things they avoided through the federal government, and cut the string and say you're on your own. So that they wouldn't come back to the legislature year after year after year, and they would not be getting a yearly subsidy. They would get one time capitalization subsidy, and that's it.
I cannot comment on that. We're in business. We think, from all we've read, that there is going to be considerable costs, and we're not objecting to those costs. And as far as saying that this is a one-time shot, you go with it and run with it, I'm not prepared to say that that is reasonable.
Your testimony said that, according to newspapers in Anchorage, it's looking like funding will be over $100 million in the next 10 years for the railroad, right?
That was, I believe,
page two.
Yes, that is right. That is, I think, the new Senate bill.
Okay. The and they believe that, too. Commonwealth North, I believe, believes that. If it has to come back year after year after year, there is going to be additional subsidies year after year. This kind of testimony would go on year after year after year, and it would eventually cost the people of the state of Alaska more money, not less money, and you would create a real umbilical cord between the railroad and public financing, and it'd never go out on its own and make money. And so that's why they took the approach that cut it loose at once, make it a public corporation, give it some working capital, and then make it go make money.
Senator Fakes, I believe the point I was trying to make in that, and beginning on page two, the point I was trying to make as representing the Alaska Trucking Association is that the language in the both bills does say competitive. We were questioning whether to underwrite then an entity and tell, as I say, and tell that entity to be competitive, and then tell the private enterprise that somehow this is fair competition. And what the point I'm trying to make is that we believe rather than a competitive rate that it should be a realistic rate, a real cost rate. And that's the point we were trying to make. We were not addressing the issue of continued subsidy or coming back for more funds. That's the point I was attempting to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a short comment, Ms. Rasher. Thank you for your testimony and in the helpful exchange between Mr. Shapiro and I. The motor carriers were kind of buffeted around, and I know he didn't. I wouldn't assume to speak for him on many things, but I'd speak for both him and I on this, and that is neither one of us, I know by our remarks, meant anything of a derogatory nature or anything else towards the motor carriers. We were just using it by way of example for the points we were trying to make.
Yes, none was taken. We understand that.
Senator Gill.
Thank you, both the bill called, both Bill Senate Bill 352 and one of the companion House bills calls for a public corporation to be created that is, and it calls for little if any legislative oversight. What's the position of the Trucking Association?
We want some oversight. Now, if that is through the legislature, then certainly that is the most effective. And we have said, and I may perhaps should have read it, but we want accountability. We do not believe that this railroad corporation should be able to operate in secret, so to speak, and in silence from the public. We want accountability. And if that is legislative accountability, then yes, if that's the most effective. And we believe that would be the most effective.
We want it to run on a business-making basis with business principles used, but still tied to the legislature.
If that is the means, the point we were trying to make is that, you know, the motor carriers are required to file their rates, and that is filing publicly, and to file their tariff. There is no provision in here that that's going to happen, and it allows for public input and scrutiny.
You're not asking for any more public input into the operation of the railroad than the public input into the operation of the trucking industry.
Absolutely. We want to all play from the same sheet of music.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said earlier that you'd like it if the rates were based on real costs, and if the advantage to that were lower rates for the railroad, so be it, right?
Absolutely.
If that were the case, would you lower your rates?
We do all the time, yes.
What if it came out that the rates, using the real cost figure again, the rates were to be higher? Would you increase your rates?
When the cost goes up of our service, certainly we increase our rate. We go through the normal filing period. We have to prove that this rate is reasonable, and we have that requirement. And yes, we do raise and we do lower our rates, and the railroad should have that. But it should be, someone should determine that that is reasonable, and that is not done to capture the market, so to speak, or to. Well, probably the ICC apparently is now doing it. I think it's pretty clear that perhaps the legislature, or particularly each of these bills do not want intrastate regulation. This, we are dealing with interstate movement of freight, so it would possibly be the ICC. Now, again, you recognize that the ICC itself as a commission, as an enforcement of regulatory body, may disappear by 85 or 87. That's a possibility. So I'm not saying locking that in and saying that the ICC have to regulate this. I'm saying that we do believe and we do feel that a regulated transportation industry provides stability.
If you have your choice,
I don't think we would have a choice. We are dealing again with interstate freight for the most part, and 80-90% of the freight moving over there is interstate. So if it is regulated, then that is probably the body, the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said basically you think it's probably effective to restrict the ongoing subsidy, or you feel that if they have a umbilical cord back to the legislature, the ongoing subsidy might be less, or there'd be at least more public input. And I would suggest that that's probably just the opposite of what would happen. When we passed the sunset laws, we passed a law that said everything will come back for review with the thought of reducing regulation. In fact, everything has come back for review, and we have done almost nothing in reducing regulation. However, we've substantially upgraded enforcement powers and a lot of powers in the regulatory structure and produced more and not less. And I would suggest that coming back to the legislature, from your perspective of less subsidy, coming back to the legislature on a continuous basis may be just the opposite of what you really want. It might be much more appropriate if we took the Commonwealth North model with one exception that completed the circle, and that is that we gave them the purchase price, we gave them the initial money, and then we offered an interest-free period. But beyond that initial interest-free period for startup, the money had to come back to the state so that the cost of capital, which is your real loss in competitive side, also has to come back to the state. Then they're truly competitive.
I don't want to, perhaps I am confusing you now. When we are saying oversight or public input, we are talking mostly about when you establish a rate, not when you get the subsidy, when you should get it. We are saying that rate needs to be reasonable. We need to have some access for input. You are giving a railroad, you are setting up a railroad corporation, and you are saying, go for it, operate this system. Within that operation and within that directive, then, they're going to have to establish a rate. We are saying that when that happens, somewhere along the road, you need to have public input into that and not make it secret. If you have a rate and if it costs this to haul a certain commodity over a certain route, then that should be published. That should be made public so that a small shipper or a large shipper can look at that and they can say, this is the price, as long as that is the price. And we can all take advantage of that.
But that will never include the cost of the interest or the cost of capital component in any private sector comparison, unless there's a payback.
Well, we think there is a way of establishing a reasonable rate, and we are not saying that you look around you and you see what everybody else is charging. But we say that perhaps you start from that, and if that has been a reasonable rate, we're not trying to lock the railroad into the same rate that we have now or had yesterday or intend to have tomorrow. And I know that sounds confusing. We want the ability to know what the rate is and how they established that rate. And we think that the public has the right to know that. We have to establish a rate that is reasonable, and it has to be proved reasonable. So that's what we're asking.
Their established rate, based on cost of service, is going to be lower than yours, even in places where the railroad couldn't traditionally compete with trucking because of the cost of capital component. How do you intend to deal with that, just through the political process?
Again, let me tell you that we take advantage of that rate. You see, we are shippers, we are customers, as well as being on some routes, some parallel routes, a competitor. What we really want to say is, do not allow estate when you buy the railroad, and no matter what system you put it in, don't allow that system to put private industry out of business. And maybe we're not sophisticated enough to tell you what that language should be. We can tell you that that is our concern. We compete now with the railroad, and it's generally at a lower rate, but we compete.
Yes, thank you. Both you and the previous speaker mentioned to add amendments to the bill, either bill, prohibiting the railroad from going into the water carrier business or the motor carrier business or whatever. In Senate Bill 352, that was the intent, that this was a railroad business only, and it was never the intent to give the railroad the authority to expand beyond running on its little track. And if that's not clear in the bill, then I, as one of the authors of the bill, will see that that's clear. It was never the intent for the railroad to do anything but be in the railroading business.
We appreciate that, and that certainly does address our concern. I believe that is in on page 10 of House Bill, page 10 of Senate Bill. Our particular concern was that we didn't know what it meant when you said plan for and undertake expansion of the railroad and railroad activities.
Yeah, that was just railroad.
Yes.
Extending into a resource district, say,
absolutely,
the Canadian border on its track.
Right.
Not into motor or water transportation.
That certainly addresses our concern.
There was, in fact, a specific provision in there that said other modes, and it was deleted for that purpose.
Right.
Before the bill was introduced.
Okay.
But we'll make it more clear if that's what you want.
That is our concern, and I appreciate that.
Any comments? Further comment? Mr. Tracy, one question I'd like to ask you going through. I believe, heard you say that the railroad should not be allowed to deliver their shipments to off-siting customers. I might add a comment there. If I remember correctly, the Alaska Railroad now owns local delivery trucks and trailers that will be transferred with the railroad. Should they be not allowed to continue on as they have in the past with their deliveries and so forth?
We don't want local distribution, no. We want to be able to go to the end of that railway or to that railway and distribute it locally.
Line haul.
That's exactly. And line haul, local and line haul, sir. We want that, yes. We want to stay in business. That's what we're saying.
Does anyone else have a question for Ms.
Frank? I'm confused.
Great.
Your answer was that you want line haul. Then what your answer really is that you want the railroad to stop using their trucks and stuff?
At this point, although they own some equipment, they're not actively. The federal government did not. Now, they have that capability. You know that. I mean, and right now, the federal government could have bought, could have gone into the trucking, into the water, into the carrier. They have that capability. They did not exercise that. And, yes, they may have purchased a few trucks. I don't know the number they have. They are not, though, competing. They are not going out and hustling to sell that service. We don't want them to do that.
I said they do use that service, though, on occasion.
Yes, they do.
And
occasionally, yes.
And as we say, as people are testifying, say, make it competitive and let it stand on its own. Leave out the subsidies. If that competitiveness means do away with some abilities they've got already, then that's all right. Though they may or may not be using it.
I think that whether they own trucks right now, the fact is that they are not picking up and doing a tremendous volume of delivery on the local or the long haul portions, and that's what we like.
Representative Bettisworth, you have any questions? Mr. Asher, I want to thank you very much for your testimony. You will be available for any further questions?
Yes, sir, I will be. Thank you again.
And get those figures for us on the 10,000.
I certainly will.
Thank you. Our next one on the list here is Mr. Hal Schuyler, Director of Public Affairs, Alaska Division, Sea Land Service Incorporated. Glad to see you, Hal.
No. Mr. Chairman and fellow members of the committee, we at Sealand do not oppose a takeover of the Alaska Railroad by the state of Alaska from federal government. The railroad is necessary for the future growth of Alaska resource development areas and communities. Coal, minerals, and farming products must have avenues to tidewater ports in order to be exported to world markets. The market for Alaska's minerals, wood pulp, and grains will be foreign, and the most economical method to move bulk cargoes to tidewater is by rail. We analyzed in great detail Senate Bill 10 and House Bill number 512 and applaud their imaginative and far-reaching purpose. However, we at Sealand are concerned about the administration, operation, policies, and rules and regulations under which the Alaska Railroad Authority will be operating and carrying out its mission. As presently drafted, the legislation provides us the following concerns. A state-owned entity which is exempt from federal, state, and local taxes has a great advantage over other competitive modes of transportation that are paying taxes to federal, state, and local communities. The opportunity for the proposed railroad authority to sell bonds or bond anticipation notes as tax-exempt vehicles gives the authority another definite edge in obtaining capital for improvements as compared to private transportation that must compete for money in the open market, paying considerably higher interest rates than does the state government. The Alaska Railroad Authority is vested with the ability to acquire and operate other modes of transportation service connecting to the railroad's rail service in direct competition with private transportation. This allows the railroad to buy truck lines, water carriers, and airlines. This part of the bill is particularly worrisome as the Alaska Railroad Authority could very well become a state transportation system with no competition, as the private sector would not be able to financially compete with the authority. There is also the fact that the state would lose a considerable amount of tax base if and when private sector transportation companies are forced out of business. The legislation liberally discusses rate making and rate policy. The establishment of rates for Alaska Railroad Authority's revenues will affect the private carriers of other modes of transportation. We are certainly not suggesting that the legislature dictate the authority's rate policies. However, we feel that all rates prescribed by the authority must be at a level sufficient to recover the full cost of providing the particular transportation concerned, taking into full account the level of subsidy and the cost of borrowed capital. Sealand would urge specific legislation amendments which would prohibit the state-owned railroad from charging rates which are below those charged by private-owned carriers for freight on which both carriers compete, where the rates do not recover the full cost of the service offered, to include any direct or indirect subsidy. We feel the legislation needs an antitrust provision. The legislation needs to be amended to place the state-owned railroad under state antitrust laws. All of the privately owned water carriers and motor carriers are subject to the federal and state antitrust laws. And while this body cannot place the railroad under federal antitrust laws, still it is our belief that the railroad should be subjected to the same laws as are the private carriers. In short, we should all play by the same rules. I'm sure this committee is aware that the Staggers Rail Act of 1980 has virtually deregulated interstate rail service. As a practical matter, the Alaska Railroad and all other rail lines are totally unregulated. While deregulation may be good in theory, the trade between Alaska and the lower 48 is in essence a microcosm. All transportation modes compete directly with each other for the same basic consumables. We rarely acknowledge that large portions of Alaska Railroad's freight are bulk commodities. Still, all of the competing modes are regulated while the railroad is not, thus giving the railroad a distinct competitive edge which can be subject to abuse. The bill provides for the establishment of contract rates by the railroad. The Staggers Act allows contract rates, but that law contemplated the railroads entering into contracts with major shippers whose cargo they had historically handled for the benefit of both. That contract ability was not envisioned to be used as a competitive tool, as it has been utilized by the Alaska Railroad. Sealand has challenged these practices both before the Interstate Commerce Commission and in the courts to no avail because of the railroad is unregulated and immune from suit while owned by the federal government. We cannot legally establish contract rules and rates and therefore cannot effectively compete with such rates. We urge this body to critically scrutinize that portion of the bill and delete such provisions from the legislation. Articles 4 and 5 of the legislature provide for the authority to exercise states' power of eminent domain condemnation. Sealand does not challenge the state's ability in this area, but we strongly feel that this right should not be lodged within the authority, but should be reserved to the state to preclude any competitive use or abuse. It is a simple matter for the railroad authority to approach the state to obtain the ability to acquire the necessary rights away. Sealand notes that the authority can determine what information it keeps confidential. We urge that this ability is subject to possible abuse. At a minimum, all rates, rules, practices, divisions of revenue contracts, if any, and cost data must be open to public inspection. We at Sealand are not here merely to tell you what is wrong with this proposed legislation. We wish to be constructive and assist in reaching the best possible compromise, which will work to the benefit of the state, its citizens, and the transportation carriers serving Alaska, as well as to see a viable railroad paying its way in the state of Alaska and growing with the resource development. Certainly, we'd like to thank these committees for allowing Sealand Service, Inc. to testify and explain our views. It is certainly not our intent to hinder the railroad's operation and or its development and expansion. The railroad is a necessary ingredient for the future of this state. All we are asking for is fair competition for all modes of transportation in the marketplace. And the water transportation and truckings and
the. You say this gives an advantage to the railroad not to be regulated.
Yes, it would.
Do you support the ATC?
We're a member of it, yes.
That regulates, doesn't it?
ATC does not. Oh, yeah, ATC, the Alaska Trucking Association?
Alaska Transportation Commission.
Oh, yes, it does. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
So I guess.
I thought you were talking about CJ's organization.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So you can't have it both ways.
What do you mean now?
Well, if everybody is regulated and you get advantages, or you say the advantages to the railroad not to be regulated, but the ATC, the Alaska Transportation Commission, is giving certain advantages to certain carriers who are regulated.
Well, you mean advantages, giving the truckers more advantages than...
Well, air carriers, mainly. Go ahead,
Senator Howell.
Yeah, I guess the question is, if... being non-regulated is an advantage in a competitive marketplace, then why do all the trucking organizations and major permit holders in the state support the continuation of the regulatory agency, the Alaska Transportation Commission?
Yeah, I had a testimony for that last year now. I've forgotten what I said, but I'll get it and send it to you.
While he's thinking about that, I think Mr. Walsh has some questions.
With regard to point number 7, Mr. Shiler, and that is the rate-making authority and the ability to compete, and I'll return to the same thing that I discussed with Mr. Shapiro. The Section 709 studies by Congress found that the rates were comparable, that they were justifiable.
Yes, the Congressional Committee did, yes, found that. Mm.
So, again, as Senator Fake said earlier, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and it doesn't look like it's broke.
No, and what happens? The ICC goes under, and there's no ICC anymore.
Well?
What regulates the railroad?
At this point, the ICC hasn't gone under. And,
no,
I mean,
but
what
I mean,
happens if there's... another earthquake. Well, when there's another earthquake, we'll deal with it. I guess I see what you're saying. If the ICC does go under, these folks are undoubtedly faced with a major issue. But until that happens, and based upon the 709 and the other things that you undoubtedly, you know, are aware of and that we discussed this afternoon, I'm not sure that I understand the need for additional regulation.
Well, we've seen the railroad. Honorable Bettisworth, I think, is old. Had been around Fairbanks long enough to remember the day when Alaska Railroad used to charge $1.50 more in the wintertime to haul the freight to the customers and drop their rate at $1.50 in the summertime when the truckers start operating.
So, well, and I think we'll.
You know,
we'll
this is the kind of thing you can get into without regulation, and when you have an authority that has total autonomy.
But you're not saying that kind of thing takes place now.
No. I was just giving you an example that it could, if it maybe.
Point number nine: the disclosing of information, all rates, rules, practices, divisions of revenue, contracts, and cost data open to public inspection. If we're all going to play by the same set of rules, would Sealand be willing to do the same thing?
I think we make most of our. We have up until recently. What's the law now, Leonard? Do we have to make our public our divisions now, or is that some talk of
the standard? You saw your Section 15 division.
Yeah, in the maritime we have to, and the ICC. I think they're going to do away with it. But under maritime administration, we have to.
To the same extent that you have listed here that you want the railroad to?
Yes.
All the rates and rules and everything?
Yes.
Contracts? Okay. The final thing that I have, and you may not be able to respond to this, but because you may not have been party to it, but I have a letter here, May 6, 1982, from Tom Allison, who's an attorney in private practice in Seattle, but as one of his clients, the FRA, to Mr. Greg Lawler, who Committee on Energy and Commerce. Dear Greg, in accordance with your request, I'm forwarding to you the text of the agreement recently reached between Sealand Industries and Crowley Maritime. This agreement has been extensively discussed with officials and representatives of the state of Alaska, et cetera, et cetera. The letter goes on to state that this agreement applies only to federal legislation, doesn't necessarily bind anybody on state legislation. But there are two points to it. Substantive legislative provisions necessary to our agreement are as follows, and there's an amendment to the antitrust section which says, which strikes language that says the Interstate Commerce Commission may, after notice and opportunity for hearing, exempt the state, et cetera, et cetera. That was struck. And with Sealand's agreement, along with the state, Crowley, and others, language was added that's in the final bill that says nothing in this act precludes the state from explicitly invoking any exemption for the antitrust laws as may otherwise be available. So this was included in the federal legislation, giving the legislature the option because Sealand agreed to it. And the second point is protections against predatory pricing. And I quote from the letter. The existing language of Section 6A explicitly provides for the application of ICC Act to state-owned railroad in the same manner as it applies to any other railroad, et cetera. And that, because of that agreement, again, the ICC authority that's contained in the bill and with which the legislature is now grappling,
we got the same language in this bill, in this one,
I believe so.
On the table?
In the federal bill, no.
In
the federal bill, based upon agreement with the state, Sealand, and others, the state was given some options. And now your position is that the state should not exercise those options. And
Wait a minute, Mr. Walsh. I was in on that agreement.
Yeah.
I thought that had been changed.
I don't believe
Is it still in the federal bill?
That nothing in this act precludes the state from explicitly invoking by law any exemption from the antitrust laws as may otherwise be available. That's exactly.
It's still in the federal bill. I was told by Senator Stevens' office that was out.
I think so.
About a month ago.
Find it quickly. Here's the bill. Do you have a bill?
Dave, is this the original bill?
This is the ARTA. I was
there for that agreement. I was in there.
I was not, and so the only thing that I have to go on is kind of the institutional memory. Yeah. Yeah, it's Section 608A.
It has not been taken out then?
No.
And will not? That's good.
It doesn't look that way. The last sentence of 608A says, nothing in this title shall preclude the state from explicitly invoking by law any exemption from the antitrust laws as may otherwise be available.
I checked about 2 weeks ago, and they told me it was negative.
Yeah.
I'll double check it tomorrow.
Okay, and if we're wrong, let me know and let the chairman know.
No, we agreed to that. We still stand on that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any other questions.
Okay. One, again, to reiterate, there's nothing in the bill, 362, to give the railroad authority to do anything but be a railroad.
Yeah, well, I heard you say that before, but we were interpreting the...
Okay, so if it's not clear, we'll make it clear. And the other thing is the bill has a statement that all provisions of the Federal Transfer Act and all those stipulations will be adhered to by the state. So the bill reinforces that and all those provisions in that transfer act.
Thank you.
I've got a question for Dave, since we've got him here, and it applies to one of his points. So what would the effect be if we did require that rates set by the railroad, number one, you couldn't have any rate that wasn't on a long-term basis self-justifying on that route, and number two, that the rates had to reflect a true cost and put a computation in there for what the cost of capital would be.
Mark, can you? Mark, I think, might be able to handle that better than I, because that's more his specific area of expertise.
Senator, I think the specific answer is that what goes on today under ICC regulation would apply to the railroad, or the governing rules that railroads live by. To do something additional would be a matter of A, trying to figure out exactly how you structure that type of setup, and how you get into this whole issue of taking weights apart, and you'd be adding on, again, another layer of something that already exists.
Well, we'd be adding a component that is missing because of public ownership, that component being the cost of capital.
Now, the 709 rate studies, for example, dealt with the issue of cost of capital and found that the interline rates that were being analyzed were not only fully compensatory, but it did indeed included a return on cost of capital. So you have that type of regulation today.
And that requirement on a return on comparable cost of capital would apply through the ICC to the railroad, even if there was no cost of capital?
All right, the last part of that, not following.
No, Senator, but it would, but that would be only one component that the ICC would look at. And apparently, the ICC determined that, this can be seen from that opinion, that either the fact that it was federally owned was of no consequence or of such little consequence that it wasn't a major item in terms of rate setting, and it was based on that they found the rates to be comparable.
If it isn't a major item, then it also wouldn't hurt to cover it.
Well, except if I might, Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't say right now that it would be a bad idea to do that, but I don't know, because I don't know the specific components that went in there. Maybe that was offset by something else. And to bring that into the equation, in all fairness, something else ought to be taken out of the equation. And I don't, as I said, Senator, I don't have any heartburn necessarily with adding it from a conceptual point of view, but I would want to know more myself about the components A through Z, alpha through omega, that the ICC used before I'd put in an additional component. So I guess the answer would be a definite maybe.
Yeah, well. I'd like to know that, because I think that's key to their a lot of their concern, and I think it's a legitimate concern.
I just have one more point, Mr. Charlie. I didn't mean to be too harsh with you in terms of the letter. I didn't.
No, we did check that about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Before that.
No. Because I didn't see your testimony until it was handed out, and it wasn't a point of debate with me. It was a point of curiosity, because it kind of seemed like you the concerns may have been answered in the federal legislation, and I did not mean to be critical or combative.
Sealand is still dedicated to Alaska, as you might read the other day. We made a big announcement with a ship construction program. It said $100 million, but it's about $250 million that we're going to spend in the next couple of years. So, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're not quite through with you yet. Senator Gilman is waiting to get at you a little bit.
On your item six, I don't understand the Staggers Rail Act and all that, but
I refer to my competitor. Yes, but what?
Let me finish my question, and then you make the point that because of that, the Alaska Railroad is practically totally unregulated in interstate rail service. And then you say while deregulation may be good in theory, because Alaska is a microcosm and at the transportation modes, it should be regulated. So what you're asking us to do is regulate a deregulated railroad?
No. What I'm saying is, Senator, we get a commercial business that the Alaska Railroad and the rest of the modes of transportation going after one group of businesses, or the carriage of goods from the lower 48 to Alaska. And then we have more regulation than Alaska Railroad does in our modes of transportation because of the FMC and the ICC.
Yeah, and, but what if this railroad was owned by Northern Pacific?
They would...
According to the testimony, the way I read it here, is they would continue to be deregulated.
Yes, but in the Staggers Act and the way they make their contract carriage of goods, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that that law was put in so they could, a railroad, you, Gilman Railroad, could protect your longtime customers by giving them a year's contract. And so if I came in with my railroad and I offered a lower rate, it gives you a chance to meet that rate or lose the business. And that's what that was.
Did you say you challenged that?
Yeah, we cannot do it.
No, but you said you challenged that that interpretation.
Yes.
And you lost.
Yes, we did.
Okay, so it could apply to Pacific if we were to sell this, or would it be sold to Pacific Northern? My point is, are we being asked to do something on the Alaska Railroad that if it were privately owned railroad, which we all would like to see, that would not be imposed on a privately owned railroad?
We got a consensus.
You follow my point?
Yeah, I follow it. I'm not going to answer it, though, Senator.
Any other questions? I would like to say that I think perhaps you're right. The rules should apply to both sides of the fence.
If the dollars apply to both sides of the fence. If the dollars apply the same way only.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Scott.
Here it is. Right here. Here's the one.
No, I know that.
Okay. Yeah, okay. The two things that we're going to be after here is
okay.
Okay. We're going to just take about a 3 or 4 minute break here to stand up.
Maybe somebody wants to.
Well, actually, about 15 minutes. Senator Fee and others have to attend another meeting at 4 o'clock. Give them a little time to get over there. Do we have any testimony from anyone in the area at this time? Any questions that anyone may have of any of the people who have testified?
Procedural question. Senator, can we leave our materials here?
We can leave our materials. Rhonda, we've got no problem with that, have we? In the morning? We can leave our materials in position here?
We'll check and take care of it.
Okay. Well, in that case then, in order to let some of the rest of the crew here get their stuff going, we will recess the committee hearing until tomorrow at 11 a.m. And I would point out that hopefully we won't be too late. I don't believe you. And we'll start again at 11 in the morning. I'd appreciate any of you that have any interest in this that you'll be in tomorrow, because I'm sure we have a lot of questions and maybe some answers that some of you that have participated can do for us. And I think I'd like to say on behalf of the committee, I believe I can speak for them, we're most appreciative of the data that we've got today, and we appreciate you taking your time. And we'll see you tomorrow at 11 a.m. With that, we're recessing.